Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I've been with my friends. I'm just trying to save you some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate, teach you about days like today. Call me, 1-800-743-CNBC, or tweet me, at Jim Cramer. All right, look, we all know the headlines, right? Day with Dow plunged 809 points. S&P plummeted 2.81%. NASDAQ nosedived 3.95%. Well, let's just say there are tons of bad news. Like, you know, and tons of bad articles, like the one I'm reading right now. USA Today saying, see, market turmoil, fear spikes, stock stall, Wall Street searches for signs. This is the final washout. What are they talking about? The relentless selling has panicky investors running. The recap goes on to say the VIX up 23%. The market is starting to price in a lot of bad potential outcomes, such as a recession, some financial crisis. And then investors fear central banks can no longer dampen and backstop the market. Oil prices and a slowdown in China could be signs of a global recession could drag down the U.S. There's just one problem. This isn't today's paper. No, this is a paper from January 21st, 2016. It isn't this slowdown in China. It's that slowdown in China. It's not these high oil prices. It's those low oil prices, $26.55, worried about the industry collapse. And on the day, it wasn't down 565 points. It was down a little bit more because it was 16,000 point basis, not a 33,000 point basis. So while we should be thinking about the size, the number that the Dow dropped, what matters the most is the denominator. And while there are hints that we might be near the end of the panic in that story, the writer paints the picture clearly. It's still too early to say that the market has hit rock bottom, but there are signs panic selling is leading to stampede out of the market that will eventually clear the way for recovery. End quote. Well, there it is. 2016, now. After today's disappointing Google numbers, the collapse of what was once FANG, the horrendous 20% decline in the NASDAQ for the year, I thought it might be good to offer not a bullish perspective, not a bullish perspective. We don't need a bullish perspective. What we just need is another perspective of what's going on, not from today's paper, but from a paper not that long ago. Because what we keep getting are the same stories over and over again when we have these big sell-offs. Sure enough, back then, the market ultimately held its ground, actually tested that low one more time a month later. And then it went on to have a 10,000-point rally, pretty much in a straight line. Now, I never want to be sanguine about a sell-off, especially this one. The damage is severe, especially in the technology stocks. And there are real reasons for the fear. But just like 2016, where I read you the exact quotes, you have no idea whether we could have a snapback. We know this. There are three culprits behind our decline: the Fed, Russia, and China. Any one of them could put an end to this meltdown, just like what happened 6 years ago. One reason why we got slammed today is earnings. We had a bunch of big international companies that acquitted themselves well in a rough environment, Yet the market wasn't buying it. Too hard. Because we still haven't seen any signs that the Fed, Russia, or China will change its course. Yeah, it's funny. Back in 2016, China changed its course. Of course, they pumped up their economy. The Fed got a little bit less hawkish. I mean, this is what happens. We're setting it up, just not fast enough for you and me. Now, if you're General Electric, which reported an intensely disliked quarter today, you need to see your supply chain get sorted out, China get better, and end the war in Ukraine. Tall orders. I could say the same thing of 3M. Raytheon might have joined them in the dumpster if they weren't a key arms supplier to Ukraine in a war that keeps intensifying. Yes, the bear case is palpable. The Fed isn't breaking inflation fast enough by just talking. It must act. It should act tomorrow. Can't wait for the next meeting. And it needs to shock the system with a 75 basis point triple rate hike, fully knowing that it won't cause mass unemployment. There are too many job openings as it is. What it would do is help bring down some of these metals and material costs that are teetering and need to be pushed over the edge. They can be pushed over the edge. I think it's better for the Fed to get it over with quickly rather than dragging things out like they are. If they hit the brakes in the economy, we'll need less stuff, and that will relieve many of the supply chain bottlenecks I keep hearing about on every conference call I'm on. How about Russia? Every time we think Putin might be willing to ease up, they talk about using nuclear weapons. It's sadly Dr. Strangelove, like farcical. A week ago, their feckless foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, knowing that the Russian army was in retreat from Kyiv, assured us that nukes were off the table. Wow, thank heavens. Today, with the Russian army about to advance in eastern Ukraine, nukes are apparently back on the table from this man to scare us away from sending Ukrainians much-needed tanks and artillery. Well, I'm glad our leaders are finally calling their bluff. Oh, China. I mean, how long can we be hostage to their economic weakness? 2016. It was all we talked about. It's all we talked about. China's beginning to remind me, frankly, in this with the way that they're handling the epidemic, they're beginning to remind me of the Lincoln Tunnel scene in Stephen King's seminal work, The Stand, where soldiers on the Jersey side of the Lincoln Tunnel huddled in machine gun nests trying to stop fleeing New Yorkers infected with the novel Captain Trips virus. Of course, they fail. Unlike The Stand, where north of 99% of the infected perish, the number of people who die in the hospital from Omicron after a triple cocktail of Pfizer and Moderna vaccines is remarkably small. Unfortunately, China refuses to use Western-made vaccines, even though they have much better efficacy than their homegrown ones. So the lockdown keeps spreading because it's the only way that they think they can contain the virus. Obviously, it can't. Memo to President for Life Xi. You can buy the Mandarin edition of The Stand for $18.89 on Amazon. It'll be there by Wednesday, May 11th, guaranteed. Too late, no doubt, for every city to come down with COVID in China, but act now as there are only 7 copies left. It's a fast read. Now, we don't know what will put an end to the panic. There are lots of people huddled in a few expensive safety stocks. That was a talk of the day with solid dividends. Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, can't blame them. Numbers were great. Others, including my charitable trust, have been buying the oils because some have 7-8% dividend yields as long as the price of crude stays anywhere near these levels, which I think it will bounce again today. Still others are hunting for companies with pricing power, the ones that can put through price increases without losing customers. We happen to have Chipotle tonight. They can do it. A few intrepid souls are buying tons of stocks that haven't been this cheap since 2000, 2008, or the COVID crash of 2020, the tripartite test of ugliness that's been good grounding for a bottom before, because these three moments were far more terrifying for the stock market than anything that's happening now. All three groups are not making money. However, here is how I look at it. At the moment, we have three tractable problems. If one of them gets solved, we might find a bottom worth testing a month from now, like we did in 2016. If two get solved, we're going to get a massive rally. And of course, we're in the heart of earnings season, so there are other potential positives. Now, while Alphabet, the parent of Google and YouTube, reported an imperfect quarter after the close, thanks to weaker than expected YouTube advertising revenue, I think the after-hours sell-off will become to look like an overreaction. Same time, Microsoft reported an excellent quarter, in my view, and nobody wants that now because it's part of FANG. And FANG, what is that? Well, FANG is four letters that might as well be one giant scarlet letter. It's untouchable. One thing is for certain. People hate some stocks down 50% from where they love them, something that happens every time we get hit with a huge sell-off. Even as the semiconductors and software names have been bludgeoned, well, I thought beyond all recognition, but I should still give them another whack. Yet I just need to remind you of one thing. Now, if you go take a look at the chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average over the next 7 years, after that USA Today paper that I read you from, next 7 years, look at this. you'll see that the early 2016 meltdown that was so bad, that was worse on a percentage basis, that scared everybody out, that got people from thinking that you got to get out because it's a bear market. Well, guess what? It's barely noticeable. If you're like me, you probably don't even remember how that darn sell-off even happened, let alone how it ended. Here's the bottom line. We've got three big worries in this market, but we've been worrying about them for weeks or months at this point. And I think we need to start preparing ourselves for the possibility that something may actually go right. That's been the usual trajectory of these horrifying sell-offs. I don't know why this one will be any different. Mike in Connecticut. Mike.
Hi, Jim. Booyah!
Good to have some spirited booyah.
I got a question for you. With the only U.S. flag cruise ship getting back into service, NCL's Pride of America, is NCL a buy or sell?
Okay, well, look, I happen to believe that these stocks are buys because we're traveling again. We're hearing this over and over and over again. The problem is we got a lousy market. And in a lousy market, people want to sell anything that's got a lot of debt. And Norwegian Cruise Lines has got a lot of debt. So just understand, take it with a grain of salt. When you have stocks like Alphabet that are down 200 points, people are not looking to be able to get into the market. They're looking to flee the market. Now, maybe they should be looking to get in, but they want to flee. We continue to be worried about the Fed, Russia, and China. But I think it may be time to start preparing ourselves for the possibility that something may actually go right, although it sure doesn't seem like it. Well, Mad Money tonight, fresh off its Investor Day, could Callaway Golf be in a hole-in-one for investors? I'm checking in with the company's top brass. Then after another tough day for the average, is there an end in sight for the pain? I'm going off the charts to find out. And Chipotle report after the bell. I'm running through the report with the CEO. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A few weeks ago, as the Masters Tournament got rolling, we dusted off our work on the golf industry. Recommended a couple of favorites, Acushnet and Callaway Golf. At the time, I said I preferred the former because Callaway's become less of a pure play on golf equipment. They also got a bunch of adjacent businesses like Topgolf, the high-tech driving range entertainment concept, which they acquired last year in an all-stock deal that massively increased the company's share count. More shares mean, of course, fewer earnings per share, called dilution. But today, Callaway held an Investor Day event where it announced better than expected first quarter sales results, while also providing some very encouraging long-term forecasts. On any other day, I think the stock might have been able to go up maybe 3, 4, 5%. It was that good. But unfortunately, this is a hideous moment. So instead, Callaway rolled over, down 7.5% today. I don't think it represents what was said. Could the stock be worth buying into weakness? Let's take a closer look with Chip Brewer. He's the president and CEO of Callaway Golf. I've always wanted to have him on the show to hear more about the vision he presented to investors. Mr. Brewer, welcome to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be with you today.
I'll tell you, Chip, until I read through your deck, until I studied your company, I had felt that it was a company that was largely involved golf. But then we did the deep dive, apparel, Top Golf, of course, golf itself, but everything. And I've got to tell you, I think the Top Golf, and I quizzed a lot of people, is one of the most exciting concepts in the world. So I'm trying to figure out why your company is only a $4 billion company with all those things going for it.
Well, Jim, I think you might be onto something there. We couldn't be more excited. I'm joining you today from our newest venue out here in El Segundo. So I think your old stomping grounds are very close to it when you lived in L.A. many years ago.
True.
And the Topgolf asset is beyond exciting. And the total combination that we're putting together now is the leader in what I call modern golf, which is a very high growth and exciting emerging sector.
Now, when I look at non-Top Golf, high single digits, Callaway Golf, 10 to 12%, Top Golf, 18% for revenue. I'm trying to figure out, is it because maybe there aren't enough of them? Now, you've got a roadmap coming to market near you, but I was talking about my wife. She's a golfer. And she said, you know what? We ought to go there. It's in Holtsville. I mean, Holtsville. I mean, there are people in Long Island who want more than anything else in the world to play your game. You don't have enough of them, sir.
It's an excellent point, Jim. We need more, and we're going to be building 11 per year. By the end of the year, we're going to have 81 owned and operated venues. You know, this has really moved from a regional player to a national player, and the venues do well every place we put them, north, south, east, west, heartland, coast. So we're really scaling up, and you've seen the results start to drive with that, too. I mean, just last year in Q3, we had higher EBITDA from Top Golf than they had in their whole record year. So one quarter did better than their record year prior to that. And we're scaling it and growing it from there. But the world needs more of them, and they're opening really well.
Well, I want to drill down on that because today we had a couple of reports that said that video games inside aren't doing that well. Well, video games means you eat chips, you have beer, you play games. I look at what you guys do at Topgolf. You've got a great food. You really have a great food concession. And for people who don't know it, tell them a little more about the experience.
Well, the experience is like unlike anything else. So it's for golfers, but it's not only golfers. I mean, more than half the people that come here don't say they're not traditional golfers. And so it really is society at large. It's the total addressable market is the entire universe of consumers. It fits the experience culture dead nuts on right now in terms of what it offers. And you really just see that people love that experience. They go out and they hit on a digital driving range, essentially, with music, with good food, with beverages. They're having a great time with their friends, but it's inviting, it's easy, it's the greatest thing that happened to golf since Tiger Woods. And it's not only transforming the game, because off-course golf is the same size as on-course now, but growing so much faster, it's going to be a major driving force for the entire ecosystem going forward.
Yeah. And, I just think people need to know it's
your wife's onto
now,
something.
Let's talk about Jack Wolfskin. Last week, there was a really interesting presentation by Lululemon. And what do they want to move into? Exactly where Jack Wolfskin is. We know that there are lots of companies like Columbia that want to Patagonia. There are a lot of companies in a crowded area. How can you distinguish this incredibly good brand, German, over 40 years, so that people understand that this is the premium one in the category?
Well, it's tough in the U.S., Jim, because people haven't heard of Jack Wolfskin here. But we showed some data today that shows, you know, it's got the number 2 net promoter score in Central Europe. So the consumer basically says they love that brand more than any of the others you just mentioned. It has the number one most desired jacket. It's the number one or two most sustainably oriented brand in those markets. So just because the U.S. doesn't recognize it doesn't mean that it isn't, you know, a great brand with wonderful potential. This brand is the leader in Central Europe and a strong player in China. So two key markets and, you know, really starting to deliver momentum and in growth and sell through. You know, the U.S. is just upside for us going forward. But strong brand, strong fundamentals. It fits well within our overall apparel portfolio, which is now, you know, we provided information today, will be $1 billion this year.
Well, I guess I'm struck because, like, I keep thinking, if you were not called Callaway Golf, would people know that you're bigger than this? Because so many people who got started in trading stocks just say, oh, is the Masters going to be watched? I'll buy Callaway. Well, that is just a false construct entirely, sir. You are levered to so much more than that. Do you think the Investor Day got the word out to get started about who you really are?
I think it's starting to, but I think you do have it. You've got a great point. They just think of us as what we were, and we have completely transformed the brand. We are still the old Callaway. We are the leader in golf equipment on a global basis. A great business. It's obviously had tailwinds, and we will never give up on that. It's our roots, right?
Right.
But we're so much more than that now. We're the leader in modern golf, which is so much bigger, so much higher growth rates. But people don't, you know, particularly in this market where there's this risk aversion and uncertainty, I just don't think they've fully internalized it yet. And we're going to have to prove it every day. We're ready to do it.
I think you've got to, because it's such a good story. I was quite surprised when we first looked at it, the Masters, and then the investor conference. The deck was really extraordinary. I'm really glad you came on, Chip. This is a terrific story. And it's not a lot of risk at this point. It's come down a lot. Chip Brewer, President CEO of Callaway Golf. Thank you, sir, for coming on Mad Money.
Thank you so much, Jim.
All right, so guys, we're looking at this tech implosion, right? And I understand. You think, well, wait a second. Is there anything that I can buy that is gaming that's not going to give it up? Because gaming seems to be the talk of the night. Well, I want you to look at this company, Callaway Golf. There was much more to it than I thought. And it might be the same case with you. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, what are the indices indicating? Cramer goes off the charts to get you one step ahead of the game. Next.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
After yet another terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, it is worth pondering why this market keeps melting down. I know there are a ton of reasons to be bearish here, including earnings from Alphabet tonight that didn't meet expectations. The earnings disappointments have been coming with some regularity. The Fed slamming the brakes on the economy, at this point, maybe that's old news. The Russian invasion of Ukraine has caused energy and food prices to skyrocket while terrifying the rest of Europe. Well, Wall Street's had 2 months to adjust. China's never-ending lockdowns, you know, and the way it is on Wall Street, that's now same old, same old. In other words, we've had plenty of time to digest all of those negatives that keep dragging us down. They seem to reprice every day. So when will this market find a bottom? To answer that question, I want to get out of the emotional game and into the mathematical game, or at least some game that doesn't require people being fearful, but take a more quantitative approach. That's why tonight we're going off the charts with the help of Carly Garner. And she's a brilliant technician I've known forever. She's the co-founder of DeCarly Trading, author of High Probability Commodity Trading. I love high probabilities. Garner points out that the S&P 500's correction is still well within what you'd expect from the historical average. Meanwhile, We've entered the heart of earnings season. She says declining markets often find support from quarterly earnings, especially when the seasonal trends are on your side, which they're supposed to be right now. Now, we haven't had that support yet, but we know there's still plenty of earnings ahead. Now, I want you to throw in the fact that commodity prices have moderated while we've seen some signs of stability in the bond market. And Gardner thinks you shouldn't let today's monster sell-off freak you out, although I know it did to many. See, she's not predicting blue skies from now on, but she at least believes this market's headed for a holding pattern where we could see some surprising strength. That said, don't get your hopes up, please. Even if we go back in reality mode, Gardner's adamant that you can't expect the kind of upside so many people got used to in 2020 and 2021. You're going to see why from these pictographs. So let's start with the daily chart of all things, the volatility index, or the VIX for short, going back to 2020. Now, we often call this the fear gauge. You know I focus on it a lot. But what the VIX directly measures is how urgently traders are buying put options on the S&P 500 to hedge their positions. In other words, things go down, they don't get hurt that bad. If you think of put options as insurance against stocks going down, the VIX reflects the cost of those insurance policies. How's that? When it goes up, it means traders are terrified. When it goes down, it means the fear is on the wane. Because the VIX and the S&P 500 tend to move in opposite directions, as you can expect, a peak in the volatility index is good news for the stock market. And Gardner sees signs of potential peak here. Specifically, the VIX, I thought this was fascinating. The VIX is making what looks like a head and shoulders formation. Okay. That's a very reliable pattern, not a bottle of shampoo, that usually leads to this. Okay. While the VIX is currently over 30, as long as it doesn't break 35 and start again, completing the head and shoulders pattern, Gardner sees it heading much lower, perhaps back to the teens. Again, that would be usually bullish for the market because when the VIX goes down, the S&P almost always goes up. I was very surprised that the VIX didn't spike here. I would have expected that. It didn't happen. I think that Gardner's onto something to think that we might have seen some sort of short-term end to the decline. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Look at the biggest black hole in the market, the NASDAQ 100. Now, this is tech-heavy index. We heard a lot of people blasting FANG today. You know I'm not a supporter of FANG anymore. We've had to cut back some of these positions for charitable trust. There's just too many other great situations, and FANG is too overexposed. But this contains the 100 largest non-financial stocks in the NASDAQ composite. Now, this is, by the way, the worst start for these stocks since 2008. That's very important. It's nasty. Alphabet's earnings surprised. Elon Musk bid for Twitter, in part financed by margining Tesla's stock, doesn't help. Remember, when they margin the stock, basically the broker takes it, and the stock goes down, well, you know, they'll sell it in the open market. All right, check out the monthly chart. Gardner says this picture is a nice reminder of where we are. And I think it's, I think this was a disconcerting chart. While the NASDAQ 100 has pulled back hard over the last 5 months, right, the current correction is still minimal compared to the monster 20-month-long rally from the lows in March. So now you got to be looking at this, okay? See, this down versus this up, well, you get the picture. Remember, tech is unwinding now after an incredibly explosive move. That's what these moves were about. That was the Netflix and FANG. That was the Google tonight, although I don't think it's as bad as people think. Let's put it this way. From the bottom in 2009 to the peak in 2020, okay, so that's 11 years, the NASDAQ 100 rallied 7,000 points, okay? That's no speedometer. You don't have to worry about speedometers, no radar gun. That's just a nice pace. By contrast, the COVID rally covered 10,000 points in less than 2 years. If the index is stuck to its old uptrend, where would it be? Gardner points out that it would probably be around 8,000 points higher, not 13,000. It went up too far too fast. Well, she doesn't expect to see a sell-off of that magnitude. She can't completely rule it out either. Even if the NASDAQ 100 only makes a 50% retracement of the COVID rally, that would take it down to 11,750. So we still have some downside, more than 1,000 points from where it's currently traded, although not a disaster. However, when you zoom in on the daily chart of the NASDAQ 100, Gardner says this picture, I think, is a little bit more calming. This thing's got a trend line going back to the lows of March 21. Okay, so here we go. Just under 13,175. But unfortunately, it broke down below the trend line just today. To Gardner, we are now at a make or break moment. If it can find its footing above 13,175, then she wouldn't be surprised to see a meaningful trend change. That could take the NASDAQ 100 back to its highs from earlier this month or in the lows 1,500. Boy, that would be a nice break if you were a bull. However, if it stays stuck below this key support line, and here again, this is where we are, well, the next floor is 12,500. And if we do get the kind of pullback, though, she thinks it would be an attractive opportunity. She's not cutting and running, in other words. Remember, we're already down 20% for the year. So I think that what she's basically saying is this: a little muted. We've given up a lot. OK, that other chart was, you know, boom, boom. But when you look at this daily, it does seem like it's a lot more like that and not as frightening. Now, how about the broader stock market? Take a gander at the daily chart of the S&P 500. According to Gartner, Monday's daily price bar was a textbook key reversal pattern. Market opened sharply lower, ultimately closed higher. But you saw that the problem, these reversal patterns today, we've had four of these. These were typically, in my experience, reversal patterns that led to a great next day. Well, today wasn't a great next day. We've had four of them since the correction got rolling, and they only result in follow-through buying about 50% of the time. In other words, it's a coin toss whether or not this reversal pattern from the other day will mean anything. And right now, I have to tell you that the coin toss says, well, you lost if you, it's like you called heads and it came out tails. Even when the S&P bottomed on March 14th, the rally didn't have much staying power. We ran from 4,100 to more than 4,600 over the course of 2 weeks. Then the S&P immediately started rolling over again. So as Gartner sees it, the S&P 500 may be stuck in a holding pattern. We've got major floor support holding up at 4,200 and 4,000. Okay, right here. Though we note that we fell below that first level today. This is a very powerful bad day today. At the same time, we've got a ceiling of resistance at 4,550 and 4,700. She suspects we'll bounce between these levels. After we broke through the first floor of support today, Gartner wouldn't be surprised to see the S&P sinking to 4,000. That would be tomorrow's business. At that point, she wouldn't get more bullish. Again, I like a technician who doesn't cut and run when the thing drops. But because Gartner views this as range bound, she says you need to get cautious near the high end of the range. And that would mean if it came back to 4,700, maybe a sell. Again, we're no longer in the post-COVID crash bull market where the averages could rally endlessly. That's over. Here's the bottom line. Like in January, the charts interpreted by Carly Gartner suggested that the near-term pain might soon be over. But you can't expect us to go back into a turbocharged rally mode. Instead, she expects a long period of sideways consolidation as we work off the froth created in 2020 to 2021. I think she makes a pretty compelling case. Now, we put a little more than 1% of our sideline cash into the market today for the Charitable Trust. You can read our bulletins in case we get that reversal. We didn't want to put more than that because it was so ugly. But sometimes ugly means buy. Maybe that's tomorrow's case. But we respect the downside for certain. Alan in Novato, please. Alan.
Hi, Jim. Great show. First time caller.
Oh, thank you. What's going on?
Wanted to talk to you about Fortinet. It appears to be losing money per its EPS, but I also looked at its main competition as well, and they also seem to have earnings. They're negative EPS as well, so I just want to get your thoughts.
Well, Fortinet's part of a cohort, including Palo Alto Networks and CrowdStrike, that are the last remaining high multiple stocks that have been able to hold up in this environment. Any one of those three, I think, is fine. But please recognize the high multiple stocks, frankly, have become persona non grata in most people's portfolios. And I'm not going to deny that. It's true. OK, it's just true. All right. Tonight's chart has suggested near term pain might soon be over. Sure didn't feel like that way going into the close, did it? But we won't be going back into turbocharged rally mode. That may be history. I don't mind that because individual stock pickers would do better. Much more money, including my exclusive earnings with Chipotle. By the way, they guided up. It was really beautiful. Could this quarter give investors something worth nibbling on? You're going to want to watch this and talk to when I talk to the CEO, Brian Nichols, pretty convincing. Then there's an exciting runway ahead for Twitter with Elon Musk at the helm. And I'm using an example from my past to help make sense of what he can do with the opportunity. And, of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. What happens when a beaten-down growth stock reports a phenomenal quarter? Chipotle stock has plummeted from 1,958 last fall down to the 1,400s today as part of the rebellion against high-flying momentum plays. And it's been particularly hammered over the last week. But when Chipotle reported after the bell today, wow, the results beat Wall Street's expectations on nearly every major line item. Revenue, earnings, same-store sales, you name it. More important, Magic gave you a very bullish forecast for the current quarter, too. Now, in case it wasn't perfect, Chipotle's restaurant-level operating margin came in a touch light thanks to higher food and labor costs, which were only partially offset by price increases. And you know, sometimes I would think, I get so used to spectacular blowouts by the company, and this one was just a very good quarter, although the stock has pulled back ahead of it. I was impressed. Don't take it from me. Let's dig deeper with Brian Nichols, the chairman and CEO of Chipotle, learn more about the quarter and what he sees going forward. Mr. Welcome back to Mad Money.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for having me. Good to be here. Yeah,
Brian, I've got to tell you, I am Your company's in a vacuum. You had great top line growth. You had great same store sales growth. You had really good margins. How come you're able to do like it's a kind of a normal time when it's anything but a normal time?
You know, well, we're very fortunate to have, I think, just some of the best leaders in our company with a just tremendous brand. And, you know, I think we've just built a lot of momentum in the business, and we're managing to navigate, which has been pretty tricky headwinds for the last 2 years, frankly.
Well, let's talk about a typical headwind that I deal with every day from managers. Staffing. They can't find people. That does not seem to be your problem.
You know, this speaks, I think, to the company's purpose of cultivating a better world. And then it also speaks to our growth and commitment to development. We just had our all-manager conference where we brought together 3,200 restaurant general managers and field leaders, got together for the first time in like 4 years. And I'll tell you what, we celebrated so much growth, people getting promoted, people running new restaurants. And I think that really attracts people to Chipotle. And then I think they're also attracted to the purpose that our company has, which is around food with integrity and cultivating a better world. And our staffing is actually at levels pre-pandemic. And frankly, our turnover is probably the best it's been in, I don't know, a couple of years, especially at the manager level.
Well, this is rather extraordinary. I know some of it is because you do some terrific thing in terms of cultivating education, 100 different disciplines at 10 universities, $5,250 per year tuition. But there are other companies in your industry that are struggling with unions. I know that if you're management, unions are historically not the greatest thing to deal with. I've been on both sides. But I have to admit, when I read through this, it seems like that you have some sort of secret sauce that makes it so, I don't know. I mean, people want to work there, and they're not trying to unionize. They're just trying to work at Chipotle. So it's got to be management, but it also has to be ethos, correct?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, Jim. Our culture, our values, our purpose, I think, is what really resonates with our people. I know that to be the case. You know, like I said, when I was just at our all-manager conference, and just last week I had the opportunity to be in a couple of restaurants, our folks are so committed and passionate to the idea of growing Chipotle because they know, you know, if we grow our business, we do good in their community. We do really good things for our people. And, you know, you just mentioned all the great benefits that we provide. You know, I think that really sets us apart. And, you know, we're going to stay committed and we're going to stay hard on the idea of investing in our people, investing in our culture, and investing in our purpose. And that matters a lot.
I think that even to the level of what you do digital, it shows that that's the case. For instance, when I hear you doing digital, it's to try to digitize something that not a lot of people want to do. Talk to me about Chippy.
Yeah. So, you know, funny you mentioned this. One of the things that actually got a standing ovation from all our managers was this idea that we were going to try and find ways to automate the jobs in the restaurant that frankly are just really hard to do. It makes the job more difficult. And, you know, it's one of those things, if we could automate, make it easier, I think we would get even greater job satisfaction, more retention, more excitement about the work. And one of those examples is frying chips. You know, we fresh fry chips every day in our restaurant, the tortilla chips. And, you know, we were able to partner with Miso Robotics. We created a robotic arm and it literally fries the chips. It's salt, it limes. And if you had our chips, you would know they're pretty special. Luckily, this robot has the ability to recreate that. So we're in the early days, but we're looking for additional ways to do this. You know, how do we eliminate dishwashing? How do we cut and core avocados? Our guys love mashing the avocados into guacamole, so we're not looking to replace that. We're looking to figure out how we can cut and core. So we're trying to find the things that at the end of the day, the employee would say, you know, you made my job better. And then also for our customer, we don't want to, you know, take any compromise on the culinary or the deliciousness of the experience. So that's the balance we're managing right now.
Speaking of balance, what do we want? I see the new ones have Chipotlanes, which I love. The new ones are open, obviously. Now, we had the delivery today. We were delivering because at the office. What's the right ratio?
Well, you know, look, what we know is there is a delivery occasion that customers want, you know, and we want to be available for it. It's going to be priced for it so that the economics make sense for the third party and it makes sense for our company. At the same token, we're working really hard to make these digital orders, you know, as seamless, as easy as possible. And that's where the Chipotle comes in. When you order digitally, select your time to pick it up. You know, you don't even have to get out of your car. You just zip up to the window. You'd say, Jim Cramer's here for, you know, my bowl. And you're out of there in less than, you know, 2 minutes. And what we're finding is people value that value proposition. And, you know, it's very attractive to people. And in some cases, it's a better proposition than delivery because you control the experience more than the delivery experience. But look, we want to be available for all the occasions. We're just doing everything we can to make the digital occasion as frictionless as possible, as easy as possible. And then obviously we won't compromise on the culinary.
Well, I think all of us who are customers know that. One last question. The other day, we have terrific people who were sending me all sorts of numbers. Rice, all-time high. Beans, high. Avocados are insane. Chipotle is a huge consumer of these. What can you do to offset them without raising prices too much and recognizing that someone might say, you know what, that's out of my price range?
Yeah, look, we have a full court press on driving any inefficiencies out of the system. I have to hand it to our supply chain team and our partners that supply us. You know, fortunately, we don't buy a lot of conventional items because we have a very different food ethos and food principles. So that helps us in some of the inflationary environment, but we're doing everything we can to avoid having to pass on pricing. But it you know, it's getting harder and harder. Here's an interesting fact, Jim. Just in the last 18 months, you know, if you look at what our food costs have been over the last 10 years, they're up like 10 points. 50% of that increase has happened in the last 18 months. Oh. So it's real, and it's something we got to deal with. But you know, the last lever we want to pull is pricing. So we're doing everything we can in our organization to squeeze out any inefficiencies.
Well, I've got to ask you, Paulo Sada, new one. I mean, every time you come up with a new one, we go crazy. How's the reception on this one?
You know, I hate to say it's our best because it seems like every time I say, well, this is one of our best, we beat it. But this Pollo Asada has really rung the bell with our consumers. And, you know, one of the things that I always guide my thinking on this is, do our team members love it? And you know what? They love making it. They love eating it, and they love serving it. So it's performed really well for us.
Well, congratulations. Let's not worry about the stock because this is a terrible market. Let's put it aside if you haven't bought it yet because this market doesn't like things. But you did a great job, Brian. This is the way I want Chipotle to perform, and you exceeded once again. Brian Nichol, Chairman and CEO of Chipotle. Great work. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
Guys, you know, look, 570 versus 564, you might think, well, hold on, what's that? Can you think about whether you like the food? Is it a great experience? Because I can tell you from my end, the numbers are right on target. Money, Mad Money's back at the break.
Just chill out.
Is this Chill Master J?
The Chill Man is in the house. He's happy.
The lightning round is coming up when Mad Money returns.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Come to the lightning round. Let's start with Al in Pennsylvania. Al.
Hey, F-O-R, buy, wait, or avoid.
And about side weight or voice. Which stock? Floor? No, under no circumstances we want to buy floor. That business is way too hard. You cannot buy a stock of a construction company in this environment. Let's go to Nick in New Jersey. Nick.
Booyah, Jim. Nick from Jersey City. How are you?
Long day, Nick. I'm doing okay. How about you?
Excellent. Glad to hear it. I am dying to sink my teeth into a high dividend paying pipeline company. Is Plains All American the right one? Yes or no?
Well, I'll tell you, I'd rather do Enterprise Product Partners or One Oak, but I have to admit, Plains is making a comeback. 8% is good enough for me. Tim in Illinois. Tim.
Yes. Rig Transocean Limited.
At $4, you know, look, they can only stop at zero. They can be okay. Offshore drilling, according to Schlumberger, is starting to make a comeback. Let's go to Anthony in Pennsylvania. Anthony.
Booyah, Mr. Kramer.
Booyah.
Mr. Kramer, my question is Hillary.
No, I like Irwin Simon. I know he's doing a very good job, but the problem is until we get federal legislation, period, these stocks are impossible to own. David in Illinois. David.
Hey, how are you, Jim?
I am good, David. How are you?
Long time, second time. I'll be quick. Deep your thoughts, buy, hold, or sell on Ally Financial. Thank
People
you.
Are so worried about a recession. You buy Ally, you're going to be too down market. I prefer you order own one of the majors. How about Jeff in Florida? Jeff.
Hey, booyah, Dr. Kramer.
Booyah.
Jeff from snowy Fort Myers.
Okay.
Hey, anyway, I've been missing something here with the Veru. The market cap's only about $1 billion. I think the news they came out with recently is worth a lot more than that. What do you think?
Well, Veru, I know the company well. Dr. Steiner's been on the show. That drug that they have is in phase two. It does show some very good results, but we need to see a little bit more. But right now, I understand how you feel. It could be a very big drug. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, extra, extra tweet all about it. Twitter's future now rests on the moxie of Musk. Cramer on why that's not such a bad thing. Next.
Jim Cramer, you're one of my heroes.
I look forward to your show every weeknight.
Thank you so much for helping beginning investors like me.
When you talk about the market, I just believe that you're spot on.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. Every night we watch you, I have learned and earned.
Let me tell you a story that can illustrate what Elon Musk might be able to pull off with Twitter. Something that matters because he borrowed against a ton of Tesla shares to get this deal done. Now everybody's worried those shares might end up getting sold. Now, 25 years ago, I'd started TheStreet.com with both a free ad-supported site and a subscription site. It was a radical idea to do both back then, and I promoted it everywhere, especially America Online. Yep, AOL was in its glorious heyday. This was when it was practically synonymous with internet access. We supplied AOL with a news feed that brought us a ton of eyeballs, which we converted to subscriptions at a pretty remarkable rate. Plus, they also paid us $2 million for producing the content. I'd made the deal with Bob Pittman, who was running AOL at the time. I just liked the guy. He wanted me to win. Then one day, Pittman came to see me with his really thick deck, which he said would cement TheStreet as the premier entity for business news. The deck just got better and better, more flattering, more flattering, more partnering, more partnering. Joined at the hip. I was lapping this stuff up. And then we came to the last pitch. In return for all that AOL would do for TheStreet, they wanted us to pay them $2 million. I said, hold on. I said, right now, AOL pays me $2 million. Now we're supposed to pay you $2 million for the same thing? He came back and said, hey, circumstances have changed. This is the cost of doing business with the new AOL. I thought about it for all of 2 seconds. I knew there was no other game in town. I knew if he cut me off that day and my contract was up, then it was done for. So we shook hands and I paid. I think Elon Musk can have a Pittman revelation-like moment with Twitter. First, there are so many great ideas that the company's working on for direct response ads that he can simply pick the low-hanging fruit. Second, more important, there are tons of huge businesses built on Twitter, like my franchise was built on AOL back in the 90s. So Musk can say, okay, free ride's over. And who the heck is going to say no? They need Twitter more than Twitter needs them. Twitter doesn't really understand that. I've tried to drill it in their heads. They don't get it. Third, Twitter can get more targeted with its advertising. They can become zip code-friendly, allowing companies to place ads for just a microclimate. Fourth, they can go freemium, keep the current free Twitter, but also offer a higher quality paid subscription version. Maybe no anonymity, keep the trolling to a minimum. Fifth, Twitter's security for direct messaging is so strong that Musk can plug your Twitter, your Tesla into it. Tesla right into Twitter. More importantly, they can use it for banking or shopping. I think that Twitter knew that and just didn't know how to monetize it. The problem so many people have with this acquisition is they look at Twitter's mediocre growth path, and they don't know what the site could become. But there are so many ways to monetize this business without ruining the user experience. If Musk just makes the people who've made their career on Twitter pay per month, pay per tweet, per subscription, well, you'd have a darn good business model, better than Twitter realized. It's obvious that this market's skeptical. Tesla stock plunged 12% today because people can't handle the prospect of Musk having to sell his stock to pay off a margin call if Twitter's a loser. But you know what? A lot of people didn't believe you could make money with Tesla either. Well, and look how that turned out. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.